They heaved the fallen boy to the platform and let him lie. Merridew, his eyes staring, made the best of a bad job. All right, then. Sit down. Let him alone.
But Merridew...
He's always throwing a feint, said Merridew. He did in Jib and Addis and at Matins over the Precentor. This last piece of shop brought Sniggers from the choir, who perched like black birds on the criss-crossed trunks and examined Ralph with interest. Piggy asked no names. He was intimidated by this uniformed superiority and the offhand authority in Merridew's voice. He shrank to the other side of Ralph and busied himself with his glasses. Merridew turned to Ralph.
Aren't there any grown-ups?
No. Merridew sat down on a trunk and looked round the circle.
Then we'll have to look after ourselves.
Secure on the other side of Ralph, Piggy spoke timidly.
That's why Ralph made a meeting, so as we can decide what to do. We've heard names. That's Johnny. Those two, they're twins, Sam and Eric. Which is Eric, you? No, you're Sam.
I'm Sam, and I'm Eric.
We better all have names, said Ralph. So, I'm Ralph.
We got most names, said Piggy. Got 'em just now.
Kids' names, said Merridew. Why should I be Jack? I'm Merridew.
Ralph turned to him quickly. This was the voice of one who knew his own mind.
Then, went on Piggy, that boy... Oh, I forget. You're talking too much, said Jack Merridew. Shut up, Fatty.
Laughter arose.
He's not Fatty, cried Ralph. His real name's Piggy.
Piggy, Piggy, oh, Piggy!
A storm of laughter arose, and even the tiniest child joined in. For the moment, the boys were a closed circuit of sympathy with Piggy outside. He went very pink, bowed his head, and cleaned his glasses again. Finally, the laughter died away, and the naming continued. There was Morris, next in size among the choir boys to Jack, but broad and grinning all the time. There was a slight furtive boy whom no one knew, who kept to himself with an inner intensity of avoidance and secrecy. He muttered that his name was Roger, and was silent again. Bill, Robert, Harold, Henry... The choir boy who had fainted sat up against a palm trunk, smiled pallidly at Ralph, and said that his name was Simon. Jack spoke.
We've got to decide about being rescued.
There was a buzz. One of the small boys, Henry, said that he wanted to go home.
Shut up, said Ralph absently.
He lifted the conch.
Seems to me we ought to have a chief to decide things.
A chief! A chief!
I ought to be chief, said Jack with simple arrogance, because I'm chapter chorister and head boy. I can sing C-sharp.
Another buzz.
Well then, said Jack,
He hesitated. The dark boy, Roger, stirred at last and spoke up.
Let's have a vote.
Yes! Vote for a chief! Let's vote!
This toy of voting was almost as pleasing as the conch. Jack started to protest, but the clamour changed from the general wish for a chief to an election by acclaim of Ralph himself. None of the boys could have found good reason for this. What intelligence had been shown was traceable to Piggy, while the most obvious leader was Jack. But there was a stillness about Ralph as he sat that marked him out. There was his size and attractive appearance, and most obscurely, yet most powerfully, there was the conch. The being that had blown that had sat waiting for them on the platform with the delicate thing balanced on his knees, was set apart.
Him with the shell! Ralph! Ralph! Let him be chief with the trumpet thing!
Ralph raised a hand for silence.
All right. Who wants Jack for chief?
With dreary obedience, the choir raised their hands.
Who wants me?
Every hand outside the choir, except Piggy's, was raised immediately. Then Piggy, too, raised his hand grudgingly into the air. Ralph counted.
I'm chief, then.
The circle of boys broke into applause. Even the choir applauded, and the freckles on Jack's face disappeared under a blush of mortification. He started up, then changed his mind and sat down again while the air rang.
Ralph looked at him, eager to offer something. The choir belongs to you, of course.
They could be the army, or hunters. They could be...
The suffusion drained away from Jack's face. Ralph waved again for silence. Jack's in charge of the choir. They can be... what do you want them to be? Hunters.
Jack and Ralph smiled at each other with shy liking. The rest began to talk eagerly. Jack stood up.
All right, choir. Take off your togs.
As if released from class, the choir boys stood up, chattered, piled their black cloaks on the grass. Jack laid his on the trunk by Ralph. His grey shorts were sticking to him with sweat. Ralph glanced at them admiringly, and when Jack saw his glance, he explained,
I tried to get over that hill to see if there was water all round, but your shell called us.
Ralph smiled and held up the conch for silence.
Listen, everybody, I've got to have time to think things out. I can't decide what to do straight off. If this isn't an island, we might be rescued straight away. So we've got to decide if this is an island. Everybody must stay round here and wait and not go away. Three of us, if we take more, we'd get all mixed and lose each other. Three of us will go on an expedition and find out. I'll go, and Jack, and...
He looked round the circle of eager faces. There was no lack of boys to choose from.
And Simon.
The boys round Simon giggled, and he stood up, laughing a little. Now that the pallor of his faint was over, he was a skinny, vivid little boy, with a glance coming up from under a hut of straight hair that hung down black and coarse. He nodded at Ralph.
I'll come.
And I.
Jack snatched from behind him a sizable sheath knife and clouted it into the trunk. The buzz rose and died away. Piggy stirred.
I'll come.
Ralph turned to him. You're no good on a job like this.
All the same.
We don't want you, said Jack flatly. Three's enough.
Piggy's glasses flashed.
I was with him when he found the conch. I was with him before anyone else was.
Jack and the others paid no attention. There was a general dispersal. Ralph, Jack, and Simon jumped off the platform and walked along the sand past the bathing pool. Piggy hung bumbling behind them.
If Simon walks in the middle of us, said Ralph, then we could talk over his head.
The three of them fell into step. This meant that every now and then Simon had to do a double shuffle to catch up with the others. Presently Ralph stopped and turned back to Piggy. Look. Jack and Simon pretended to notice nothing. They walked on.
You can't come.
Piggy's glasses were misted again, this time with humiliation.
You told them! After what I said!
His face flushed. His mouth trembled.
After I said I didn't want...
What on earth are you talking about?
About being called Piggy. I said I didn't care as long as they didn't call me Piggy. And I said not to tell, and then you went and said straight out.
Stillness descended on them. Ralph, looking with more understanding at Piggy, saw that he was hurt and crushed. He hovered between the two courses of apology or further insult.
Better Piggy than Fatty, he said at last,
with the directness of genuine leadership.
And anyway, I'm sorry if you feel like that. Now go back, Piggy, and take names. That's your job. So long.
He turned and raced after the other two. Piggy stood, and the rose of indignation faded slowly from his cheeks. He went back to the platform. The three boys walked briskly on the sand. The tide was low, and there was a strip of weed-strewn beach that was almost as firm as a road. A kind of glamour was spread over them and the scene, and they were conscious of the glamour, and made happy by it. They turned to each other, laughing excitedly, talking, not listening. The air was bright. Ralph, faced by the task of translating all this into an explanation, stood on his head and fell over. When they had done laughing, Simon stroked Ralph's arm shyly, and they had to laugh again.
Come on, said Jack presently. We're explorers.
We'll go to the end of the island, said Ralph, and look round the corner.
If it is an island.
Now, towards the end of the afternoon, the mirages were settling a little. They found the end of the island, quite distinct and not magicked out of shape or sense. there was a jumble of the usual squareness, with one great block sitting out in the lagoon. Seabirds were nesting there.
"Like icing," said Ralph.
"On a pink cake."
"We shan't see round this corner," said Jack, "because there isn't one, only a slow curve, and you can see the rocks get worse."
Ralph shaded his eyes and followed the jagged outline of the crags up towards the mountain. This part of the beach was nearer the mountain than any other that they had seen.
"We'll try climbing the mountain from here," he said. "I should think this is the easiest way. There's less of that jungly stuff, and more pink rock. Come on."
The three boys began to scramble up. Some unknown force had wrenched and shattered these cubes so that they lay askew, often piled diminishingly on each other. The most usual feature of the rock was a pink cliff surmounted by a skewed block, and that again surmounted, and that again, till the pinkness became a stack of balanced rock projecting through the looped fantasy of the forest creepers. Where the pink cliffs rose out of the ground, there were often narrow tracks winding upwards. They could edge along them deep in the plant world, their faces to the rock.
"What made this track?"
Jack paused, wiping the sweat from his face. Ralph stood by him, breathless.
"Men?"
Jack shook his head.
"Animals."
Ralph peered into the darkness under the trees. The forest minutely vibrated.
"Come on."
The difficulty was not the steep ascent round the shoulders of rock, but the occasional plunges through the undergrowth to get to the next path. Here the roots and stems of creepers were in such tangles that the boys had to thread through them like pliant needles. Their only guide, apart from the brown ground and occasional flashes of light through the foliage, was the tendency of slope. Whether this hole, laced as it was with cables of creeper, stood higher than that. Somehow they moved up. Immured in these tangles at perhaps their most difficult moment, Ralph turned with shining eyes to the others.
"Wacko! Wizard!"
Smashing. The cause of their pleasure was not obvious. All three were hot, dirty, and exhausted. Ralph was badly scratched. The creepers were as thick as their thighs and left little but tunnels for further penetration. Ralph shouted experimentally, and they listened to the muted echoes.
"This is real exploring," said Jack. "I bet nobody's been here before."
"We ought to draw a map," said Ralph. "Only we haven't any paper."
"We could make scratches on bark," said Simon, "and rub black stuff in."
Again the solemn communion of shining eyes in the gloom.
"Wacko! Wizard!"
There was no place for standing on one's head. This time, Ralph expressed the intensity of his emotion by pretending to knock Simon down, and soon they were a happy, heaving pile in the underdusk. When they had fallen apart, Ralph spoke first.
"Got to get on."
The pink granite of the next cliff was further back from the creepers and trees, so that they could trot up the path. This again led into more open forest, so that they had a glimpse of the spread sea. With openness came the sun. It dried the sweat that had soaked their clothes in the dark, damp heat. At last, the way to the top looked like a scramble over pink rock, with no more plunging through darkness. The boys chose their way through defiles and over screes of sharp stone.
"Look! Look!"
High over this end of the island, the shattered rocks lifted up their stacks and chimneys. This one, against which Jack leaned, moved with a grating sound when they pushed.
"Come on!"
But not come on to the top. The assault on the summit must wait while the three boys accepted this challenge. The rock was as large as a small motor car.
"Heave!"
Sway back and forth, catch the rhythm.
"Heave!"
Increase the swing of the pendulum. Increase, come up and bear against that point of furthest balance.
Increase, increase, heave!
The great rock loitered, poised on one toe, decided not to return, moved through the air, fell, struck, turned over, leapt droning through the air, and smashed a deep hole in the canopy of the forest.
Echoes and birds flew, white and pink dust floated. The forest further down shook as with the passage of an enraged monster. And then the island was still.
Wacko! Like a bomb! Wee-yahoo!
Not for 5 minutes could they drag themselves away from this triumph. But they left at last. The way to the top was easy after that. As they reached the last stretch, Ralph stopped.
Golly!
They were on the lip of a cirque, or a half-cirque, in the side of the mountain. This was filled with a blue flower, a rock plant of some sort, and the overflow hung down the vent and spilled lavishly among the canopy of the forest. The air was thick with butterflies, lifting, fluttering, settling. Beyond the cirque was the square top of the mountain, and soon they were standing on it. They had guessed before that this was an island, clambering among the pink rocks with the sea on either side and the crystal heights of air. They had known by some instinct that the sea lay on every side. But there seemed something more fitting in leaving the last word till they stood on the top and could see a circular horizon of water. Ralph turned to the others. "This belongs to us." It was roughly boat-shaped, humped near this end, with behind them the jumbled descent to the shore. On either side, rocks, cliffs, treetops, and a steep slope. Forward there, the length of the boat, a tamer descent, tree-clad, with hints of pink. And then the jungly flat of the island, dense green, but drawn at the end to a pink tail. There, where the island petered out in water, was another island, a rock, almost detached, standing like a fort facing them across the green, with one bold pink bastion. The boys surveyed all this, then looked out to sea. They were high up, and the afternoon had advanced. The view was not robbed of sharpness by mirage. "That's a reef, a coral reef. I've seen pictures like that." The reef enclosed more than one side of the island, lying perhaps a mile out, and parallel to what they now thought of as their beach. The coral was scribbled in the sea, as though a giant had bent down to reproduce the shape of the island in a flowing chalk line, but tired before he had finished. Inside was peacock water, rocks and weed showing as in an aquarium. Outside was the dark blue of the sea. The tide was running, so that long streaks of foam tailed away from the reef, and for a moment they felt that the boat was moving steadily astern. Jack pointed down.
"That's where we landed."
Beyond falls and cliffs, there was a gash visible in the trees. There were the splintered trunks, and then the drag, leaving only a fringe of palm between the scar and the sea. There, too, jutting into the lagoon, was the platform, with insect-like figures moving near it. Ralph sketched a twining line from the bald spot on which they stood, down a slope, a gully, through flowers, round, and down to the rock where the scar started.
"That's the quickest way back."
Eyes shining, mouths open, triumphant, they savoured the rite of domination. They were lifted up. Were friends. "There's no village smoke and no boats," said Ralph wisely. "We'll make sure later, but I think it's uninhabited."
"We'll get food," cried Jack. "Hunt, catch things, until they fetch us."
Simon looked at them both, saying nothing, but nodding till his black hair flopped backwards and forwards. His face was glowing. Ralph looked down the other way, where there was no reef.
"Steeper," said Jack.
Ralph made a cupping gesture.
"That bit of forest down there, the mountain holds it up."
Every coin of the mountain held up trees, flowers and trees. Now the forest stirred, roared, flailed. The nearest acres of rock flowers fluttered, and for half a minute the breeze blew cool on their faces. Ralph spread his arms.
"All ours." They laughed and tumbled and shouted on the mountain. I'm hungry. When Simon mentioned his hunger, the others became aware of theirs.
Come on, said Ralph. We've found out what we wanted to know.
They scrambled down a rock slope, dropped among flowers, and made their way under the trees. Here they paused and examined the bushes around them curiously. Simon spoke first.
Like candles. Candle bushes. Candle buds.
The bushes were dark evergreen and aromatic, and the many buds were waxen green and folded up against the light. Jack slashed at one with his knife, and the scent spilled over them.
Candle buds?
You couldn't light them, said Ralph. They just looked like candles.
Green candles, said Jack contemptuously. We can't eat them. Come on.
They were in the beginnings of the thick forest, plonking with weary feet on a track, when they heard the noises, squeakings, and the hard strike of hoofs on a path. As they pushed forward, the squeaking increased till it became a frenzy. They found a piglet caught in a curtain of creepers, throwing itself at the elastic traces in all the madness of extreme terror. Its voice was thin, needle-sharp, and insistent. The three boys rushed forward, and Jack drew his knife again with a flourish. He raised his arm in the air. There came a pause, a hiatus. The pig continued to scream and the creepers to jerk, and the blade continued to flash at the end of a bony arm. The pause was only long enough for them to realize what an enormity the downward stroke would be. Then the piglet tore loose from the creepers and scurried into the undergrowth. They were left looking at each other and the place of terror. Jack's face was white under the freckles. He noticed that he still held the knife aloft and brought his arm down, replacing the blade in the sheath. Then they all three laughed ashamedly and began to climb back to the track.
I was choosing a place, said Jack. I was just waiting for a moment to decide where to stab him.
You should stick a pig, said Ralph fiercely. They always talk about sticking a pig.
You cut a pig's throat to let the blood out, said Jack. Otherwise you can't eat the meat.
Why didn't you?
They knew very well why he hadn't. Because of the enormity of the knife descending and cutting into living flesh. Because of the unbearable blood.
I was going to, said Jack.
He was ahead of them and they could not see his face.
I was choosing a place.
Next time, he snatched his knife out of the sheath and slammed it into a tree trunk. Next time there would be no mercy.
He looked round, fiercely daring them to contradict. Then they broke out into the sunlight, and for a while they were busy finding and devouring food as they moved down the scar towards the platform and the meeting. Chapter 2. Fire on the Mountain. By the time Ralph finished blowing the conch, the platform was crowded. There were differences between this meeting and the one held in the morning. The afternoon sun slanted in from the other side of the platform, and most of the children, feeling too late the smart of sunburn, had put their clothes on. The choir, noticeably less of a group, had discarded their cloaks. Ralph sat on a fallen trunk, his left side to the sun. On his right were most of the choir. On his left, the larger boys who had known each other before the evacuation. Before him, small children squatted in the grass. Silence now. Ralph lifted the cream and pink shell to his knees, and a sudden breeze scattered light over the platform. He was uncertain whether to stand up or remain sitting. He looked sideways to his left, towards the bathing pool. Piggy was sitting near, but giving no help. Ralph cleared his throat. Well, then. All at once he found he could talk fluently and explain what he had to say. He passed a hand through his fair hair and spoke. We're on an island. We've been on the mountaintop and seen water all round. We saw no houses, no smoke, no footprints, no boats, no people.
We're on an uninhabited island with no other people on it.
Jack broke in.
All the same, you need an army for hunting. Hunting pigs.
Yes, there are pigs on the island. All three of them tried to convey the sense of the pink, live thing struggling in the creepers.
We saw.
Squealing.
It broke away before I could kill it, but next time.
Jack slammed his knife into a trunk and looked round challengingly. The meeting settled down again.
So, you see, said Ralph, we need hunters to get us meat. And another thing.
He lifted the shell on his knees and looked round the sun-slashed faces.
There aren't any grown-ups.
We shall have to look after ourselves. The meeting hummed and was silent.
And another thing. We can't have everybody talking at once. We'll have to have hands up, like at school.
He held the conch before his face and glanced round the mouth.
Then I'll give him the conch.
Conch?
That's what this shell's called. I'll give the conch to the next person to speak. He can hold it when he's speaking.
But look!
And he won't be interrupted, except by me.
Jack was on his feet.
We'll have rules! He cried excitedly. Lots of rules. Then when anyone breaks them, wee-hoo! Wacko! Bong! Doink!
Ralph felt the conch lifted from his lap. Then Piggy was standing cradling the great cream shell, and the shouting died down. Jack, left on his feet, looked uncertainly at Ralph, who smiled and patted the log. Jack sat down. Piggy took off his glasses and blinked at the assembly while he wiped them on his shirt.
You're hindering Ralph. You're not letting him get to the most important thing.
He paused effectively.
Who knows we're here? Eh? They knew at the airport. The man with the trumpet thing. My dad.
Piggy put on his glasses.
Nobody knows where we are,
said Piggy. He was paler than before and breathless.
Perhaps they knew where we was going to, and perhaps not. But they don't know where we are, because we never got there.
He gaped at them for a moment, then swayed and sat down. Ralph took the conch from his hands.
That's what I was going to say, he went on. When you all...
He gazed at their intent faces.
The plane was shot down in flames. Nobody knows where we are. We may be here a long time.
The silence was so complete that they could hear the fetch and miss of Piggy's breathing. The sun slanted in and lay golden over half the platform. The breezes that on the lagoon had chased their tails like kittens were finding their way across the platform and into the forest. Ralph pushed back the tangle of fair hair that hung on his forehead.
So we may be here a long time.
Nobody said anything. He grinned suddenly.
But this is a good island. We, Jack, Simon and me, we climbed the mountain. It's wizard. There's food and drink and rocks.
Blue flowers.
Piggy, partly recovered, pointed to the conch in Ralph's hands, and Jack and Simon fell silent. Ralph went on. While we're waiting, we can have a good time on this island.
He gesticulated widely.
It's like in a book.
At once there was a clamour.
Treasure Island! Swallows and Amazons! Coral Island!
Ralph waved the conch. This is our island. It's a good island. Until the grown-ups come to fetch us, we'll have fun. Jack held out his hand for the conch.
There's pigs, he said. There's food and bathing water in that little stream along there. And everything. Didn't anyone find anything else?
He handed the conch back to Ralph and sat down. Apparently, no one had found anything. The older boys first noticed the child when he resisted. There was a group of little boys urging him forward, and he did not want to go. He was a shrimp of a boy, about 6 years old, and one side of his face was blotted out by a mulberry-coloured birthmark. He stood now, warped out of the perpendicular by the fierce light of publicity, and he bored into the coarse grass with one toe. He was muttering and about to cry. The other little boys, whispering but serious, pushed him towards Ralph.
All right, said Ralph. Come on, then. The small boy looked round in panic.